we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead. Now, we talk a lot about free speech, my fellow Americans. This particular case, as you have been following here in the last many days, up at the Supreme Court, Murphy versus Missouri, has such wide-reaching implications for the nation. I'm not sure this is going to quite go the way that we would like to see it go. And a lot of you will be passionate about this conversation, actually, because it really gets into a lot of the things we talk about on this show and on this platform here. Welcome into America Out Loud Pulse. It is indeed Malcolm Out Loud here along with my co-host,
Dr. Peter McCullough.
Okay, so this was quite remarkable, and we're talking about a lot of things here now. So the impact of this decision, to get to the crux of it, this is about the federal government putting their heavy hand on the scale. It is overreach, and it is you can put a lot of words in here, but I call it a partnership, coercion, talking to media outlets, social media outlets, putting their heavy hand on the scale. Things like, COVID for sure, mask mandates, things of that nature. Absolutely, 100%. But also even things like the Hunter laptop and things in the political realm, the election, if you had a different point of view. We found out the government influenced all of those stories and so many more. This case is unbelievable. And from what I can see, Dr. McCullough, up front here, if you listen to some of the comments, I'm not sure they're going to get this one right. What do you think? Do you think there's still a chance for that to
prevail? I have this, Malcolm, I've got the same read you do. So let's set the stage. So this case was previously Missouri versus Biden. It was started by the Missouri Attorney General against the Biden administration for government interference in social media. And it goes back to like 2017. And it involves all kinds of things. As you said, election interference and various political maneuvers on one side or the other. And then it really intensified through COVID. And ultimately what this came down to was censorship of information about COVID-19 vaccine safety on the internet. That's ultimately what it was. And the Association for American Physicians and Surgeons, as well as American Frontline Doctors, wrote amicus curiae briefs supporting the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs are Aaron Cariotti, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who is one of my colleagues, a frequent contributor on Fox, a variety of other group plaintiffs, including the former Attorney General of Missouri. And the defendants are the Biden administration and kind of the government complex, if you will. Now, writing amicus curiae briefs for the defense, which is basically for censorship, Malcolm, was the American Medical Association, the American College of Physicians, the Geriatric Society.
Why do you think that is, those organizations there?
I think it's big pharma influence.
Okay.
Big pharma's telling them, listen, we want the government filtering things because we want to promote our vaccines and potentially other drugs. I think it's part of this biopharmaceutical complex that I outline in my book. So anyhow, this went along. By the summer of last year, the courts were saying, listen, this is so likely to succeed that we have to put a stay on government operations. We knew from the Twitter files that government agencies had like up to 60 officers either in Twitter or heavily influencing Twitter. They're in Facebook and elsewhere. And the Biden administration came back and said, no, we want this. We want to be able to censor. And they kept fighting for the right to censor. So this came down to this court case. I listened to part of it yesterday. And a couple of things. My testimony has been used in Supreme Court cases, two of them, during the pandemic, but I've personally never been there. But Aaron Cariotti, Jay Bhattacharya were physically there. There was a rally outside the Supreme Court. It was led by Dr. Piero Corey. Many impassioned speeches were given. And then listening to the dialogue back and forth, I was stunned. First of all, I was stunned at how conversational it was. It wasn't nearly as procedural as what I thought. Remember the Supreme Court, there's no new evidence presented. It's above an appellate court.
Right.
It's simply people talking and presenting arguments. It's actually pretty interesting. But I think it was Sotomayor. I couldn't, detect exactly who the voice was. But this was one of the examples that I tweeted out to let people know what was going on. The statement was, well, listen, what if somebody on the internet, on social media, started showing images of kids jumping out the window as a popular thing to do, but they're jumping to their death, and kids all over the United States started jumping out the window to their death? Shouldn't the government intervene and take down those posts? But I mean, what do you say? I mean, that's the most ridiculous example that's very far away from a post regarding, vaccine myocarditis or a blood clot. But I know what they're trying to do is they're trying to pick the most ridiculous example and then say, well, everyone agrees the government should be in social media. Now, here we go. It's game on. Now, the response to that, Malcolm, was, listen, the government has the full right to inform the country on anything it wants to inform the country. If it wants to inform on jumping out windows, send out a White House press briefing or send out a public health release. But you can't go in and manipulate social media or mainstream media for that matter. Now, while that was going on, the New York Times puts out an op-ed. The New York Times says, basically supporting government censorship.
Of course,
Can
of
you
course.
believe that? Yeah, the New York Times comes out and says the government really should be doing this. And so they tip their hand, not like, hey, let's see what finds out in the Supreme Court. So we have medical societies and the New York Times, probably a whole load of other entities, really behind the government, supporting the government and censorship. I think it's big pharmaceutical influence in this biopharmaceutical complex. And I think you're right, Malcolm. It may not turn out too well.
Our country is so lost right now. It is so incredibly lost. The media, the Fourth Estate, they're such an embarrassment to the industry. What has transpired here, when you mentioned the New York Times, there's no shocker there. If these people only realized what they're doing, and potentially they do realize, but when it goes too far and it comes back and hits them on the backside, which I think it will do at some point ahead, when this thing becomes totally unraveled, and it's headed that way right now, then organizations like the New York Times will realize that, excuse me, they stepped into it, too much. The implications of this are unbelievable from everything I see here, and we're talking incredibly far-reaching. We're not just talking about a vaccine or a mask here by any stretch of the imagination. We're talking about all kinds of things. Like, you remember, Peter, the Russia collusion. Remember, you couldn't talk about that either. That was all censored. The laptops were censored. Jussie Smollett was censored. All of this stuff. I mean, even the Trump about the bleach and the COVID. Everything was whacked out.
Well, remember origins of the virus. You couldn't say that it looks like it came out of the lab.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You
So,
could the Wuhan lab, that was all censored. I mean, big time censored.
right. I mean, that was automatically, you'd get wiped off social media. And
That's
these were
right.
all things
That's
that turned out
right.
to be right. And you can't, now remember, there is no
Right.
such thing as conspiracy theories. When we're
That's right.
presented with some
That's right.
new development, they're rational theories. We have the right to rationally think
Right.
about it, come up with a theory, and discuss it.
Right. But here's what I want to ask you. Here's the crux to me of this thing. Okay. So back to the argument where the court was presenting. All right. Government has all their channels, first of all, beside a massive press they have these daily press briefings and all of that, but they have their channels on all of the social media, all of the media. I mean, they can get the attention of the country any time of the day, any moment, and they can put their messages out there, what have you. That's different, and of course, we don't have any problem with that, as we wouldn't. That's not the argument here. So when they talk about that being an argument, it's not an argument. But the problem is when they go underneath in a very underhanded way. And they talk to these media outlets and they talk to these social media outlets and they ask them to pull posts down and they ask them to censor people. And this is all documented now. This is all documented throughout Twitter, throughout Facebook, throughout Google. This is all documented. This is wrong. The government should not be doing that. This is 100 million% wrong. Now, if the court gets this wrong, and it appears that they will, I'll tell you what. It is such damage to our First Amendment and to freedom of speech in this nation that we have now taken a sharp turn, a very sharp turn to this new beat of, that's not socialism, communism. I mean, we are headed down because in communist companies and in dictators, countries that are run by that, government controls the media. They tell the media what to say and how to say it. They shut social media off when it steps into anything they don't like. They control all of it. China, Russia, Venezuela, all of these countries throughout the Middle East, Iran. You don't have free speech there. Government has influenced all of those channels. Isn't that what we have now here, Peter, with all this?
It's getting pretty close. Now, I was thinking about that jumping out the window example. You could even say, listen, the government can have its own Twitter account and they can
They
tweet
do
out.
have it. They do have it.
Yeah, they do. They have lots. Every government agency has a Twitter account. You can say, listen, warning, we don't think it's a good idea to jump out windows. They are
Exactly.
entitled to do that,
Exactly.
but they're not entitled to take down other
The
people's
problem
posts.
is, Peter, when you have a when you have an administration, listen how bad this is. If you have an administration, whether it's Democrat or Republican, whether it's a Biden who is a far left or a Trump who is on the right, I mean, the same argument would be made for Donald Trump. He shouldn't be doing those things either. This isn't about left and right. This is about right and wrong, Peter. Do you understand what I'm talking about here?
I was thinking about this
What if
while
he
you
does the
were.
same thing? What if he does the same thing? To talk to me,
Well,
what happens then?
here's the difference between Trump and Biden. Remember when Trump was in office, he really learned how to command Twitter, right?
That's right.
And
And they didn't like it. They didn't like it at all.
well, here's the thing. Is, you don't even need to have a White House press briefing or be handled by a bunch of handlers. You could just tweet out to the nation, and that's what Trump was doing. And in the end, they took away his Twitter account.
Well, by the way, now stop, freeze that thought right there. Now, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Well, you just hit the nail. And you know why that was? Why that was? And that's been proven now. The government, they forced and influenced the Twitter folks. This is before Elon Musk now had it. They forced them, they forced their hand and pulled Trump off. That was all influenced by the federal government. That's where that was coming from. And that's what they did. They pulled him off. That was influencing from that. So there were people in other levels of the bureaucratic state and others who influenced that. It wasn't the president because the president didn't have control, but the bureaucratic state had control. Do you see how bad it is now?
Right. But here's the distinction. So I think Trump really adroitly used Twitter to his advantage. He had the biggest megaphone in the whole country. And again, the deep state essentially shuts him down. Biden gets in. Biden, they've got complete control over social media. And the Biden administration, to my view, never really capitalizes on it in terms of their messaging. Now they're screwing up everybody else, but Biden doesn't tweet like Trump did, or doesn't have a surrogate tweeting him for him like Trump
No,
did. Now
no.
I just looked in the search here to see if Trump had weighed in on the Missouri versus Biden case, because it affected him, affected me. I got th thrown off Twitter.
That's
I
right.
can't find anything.
Not
I
yet.
can't find anything. I mean, this is a golden opportunity for Trump. If he wants to separate himself from Biden, why wouldn't he come out on the side of
Well,
free
he
speech?
will. He will. There's no doubt about it. I don't think he wants the influence of this. And this is going to show the difference, to your point right there, you're exactly right, between Trump's hand, because they're always saying things that he's not. This is a way for him to stand for that truth, whatever that might be. Listen, government can put their messaging out there, no problem, all day long, like you say, on like anybody. But I mean, but to coerce and demand or talk to social media or media outlets to force their hand and then to censor, shadow ban, destroy, throw off because you didn't hit the narrative that big government wanted, which happened to you personally, Peter. It's happened to me personally. I was thrown off of Facebook big time, lost all that traction. I mean, just totally. And YouTube as well. YouTube, they censored all the videos. They pulled all the videos off. I mean, that's Google. Google owns YouTube. And that's a lot of garbage. That's why we don't post anything more on YouTube. We stopped several years back, about 5, 6 years ago. Now it's been a while. We only post on Rumble because it's a disaster. These people, they're communists, Peter. They're communists. It's what they are. It's terrible. Let me read this tweet or on X, whatever you want to call them now. I don't know why he changed the name of this thing because it really meant everybody doesn't. And
It's
I.
not helpful. Everybody calls it Twitter.
Dumb. It's dumb. And then they put in their messages, they put X, formerly Twitter. I mean,
Twitter.
come on. What are we doing here? I mean, and what do you call it? Exon? What do they call that? Do you have any idea? I don't
I
know.
know.
I mean, I don't know. All right. Anyway, so on X, I call it X Twitter is what I call it now. X Twitter. So on X Twitter, Rand Paul says this. Listen to this. Today, SCOTUS heard Murthy versus Missouri, the most consequential free speech case in the United States history. This is not just about social media companies. It's a critical examination of government overreach, the Biden administration and FBI's efforts to influence big tech and to silencing dissent tramples on the First Amendment. Our focus must be on preventing government censorship, not compelling private entities to act as censors. This case could redefine our free speech. That's a pretty well-worded message, Peter. And I think Rand Paul hits it head on. And if they get this wrong, and I don't know whether they go back and hit their heads, the Supreme Court justices, because a lot of the narrative, to the point you were talking about a moment ago, when they're talking, they don't say their decision, but they ask questions. And you can surely define from previous examples the way the court might be thinking by the way they ask the questions and what they're asking and their comments back, correct?
Yeah, and I got a real sense of paternalism. This idea of, well, the government knows best. People are kooky. The government needs to step in and not, have somebody influence somebody else. I was getting that sense, and so I didn't like what I heard. Now, congratulations to Rand Paul. That's showing some leadership on the side of free speech. I'm a little disappointed we didn't see more senators coming out, more congressmen coming out. You said Trump has played it quiet. Maybe Trump's thinking is he doesn't want to influence a Supreme Court case because some of the judges, he selected for the Supreme Court. So maybe wise for him to be silent. But boy, this is his chance to separate himself. Well, let's play this out. If the court sides with the plaintiffs, so Jay Bhattacharya, Aaron Cariotti, the Missouri Attorney General, that means no more government censorship in social media. They've got to get out, and there's going to have to be some audit checks to be sure that the government is not, suppressing, running algorithms, etc. It's going to be hard to enforce. But what if we're right, and it becomes game on for government censorship? Expect things to get rough because I have a feeling there's going to be an attempt to crosswalk anything that goes against the government narrative to domestic terrorism. You can
Interesting.
think about this. Yes. Well, you said something about the vaccines. The vaccines are for national security. You've threatened national security. Therefore, you're a domestic terrorist. I can see that starting to happen. And some people may do, Malcolm, they may do what you did 8 years ago and say, listen, I'm out. It's now time for independent media.
Yeah, it really is. I've lost trust in the system, frankly. And I seen this coming years ago. It really was concerning to me. I mean, I never expected to be here at this point, truth be told. I really never did. And I never expected this to be what it is. And I mean, there was really not, and it really was a very organic everything, this rise of independent media and what has transpired at America Out Loud. It wasn't like some agenda that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But it kind of took a life of its own because the media was lost for a lot of years before then. I mean, we've seen this play out over many years, the way they've censored, the way they've shadow banned, the way they picked cherry picked stories, the way the media is, the government's having their hands in these stories. We're in some uncharted waters here. We're in some uncharted waters. And I'll tell you, I feel, Peter, this past week here, my daughter's in from school, from college, and with spring break, okay, all right. And so we had a little gathering at the house, and her boyfriend's over and family members and others, and of course these topics come up, and I try to refrain myself because I really, yeah, it's not good. I'm better to just shut the hell up rather than talk, especially with friends and family, because my voice is, it's like I keep my comments more public than private, and that way private is better to just shut up for me. But it's hard to do that when, and I'm listening to the young people talk in the room, and it becomes more and more relevant to me that we are we're losing this fight that we are fighting for our nation, for our free speech, for freedom, for liberty, for justice, that it feels like we're losing it based on all of the factors that we're fighting every day, it seems. And I just don't have a good feeling anymore about things. I'm becoming, it's hard for me, Peter, full disclosure, because I'm an optimist. But I feel very pessimistic about things right now, and I don't like it. I really am upset with myself that I feel that way. I'm being honest, I'm being straightforward with you. I don't like it, but I don't know how else to feel. Do you have any sense of that as well, or am I isolated in that thinking?
Well, remember what we've been talking about is a court case that largely deals with the issue of free speech around election integrity, politics, and the pandemic response, but it's within large social media platforms. That's what we're talking about. Malcolm, if this is decided in favor of the government, is the next step that you get somebody calling on your platform?
Exactly.
You get a letter from one of the agencies
That's exactly.
and said, "We've been listening to your platform. We don't like what you hear.
Cease and desist. Cease and
Cease and
desist.
desist, or we're calling you in for questioning."
That's right.
That could be, this is what the point where we're reason why
Yeah.
we're spending so much time on this.
Yeah.
This is a slippery slope, because if they start going after independent media, we've already seen Rumble is shut down in France. It's shut down in Brazil. There's a giant discussion of should we shut down TikTok in the United States or not? And I'm not an expert in this, but I've heard arguments that maybe shutting down TikTok is a Trojan horse for trying to shut off other
Well, it
social media
is.
now.
It's a great point to bring up. And by the way, to your point just there, did you see what part, did you see what side Rand Paul came out on that debate about TikTok? Did you see?
No.
He came out and said, yeah, I could tell you 100% his comments, because I covered this past week, where it's the wrong move. We should not be putting our hand on the scale and pulling TikTok off of that. Not that they're not harmful, not that China shouldn't do this or that, but that it goes against everything we stand for, and it is a slippery slope. If you do this to one, you do it to others. And here's the bigger crux we found out in the language of that bill. In the language of that bill, it gives the government, again, too much freedom, that it's not just TikTok, and it's not just international players and terrorists or any of that it's domestic. It's domestic stuff
Wow.
right here that they can do this to domestic companies, to media companies, to other folks. And Rand Paul said, absolutely not. This is a bad deal. So that's what happened.
Oh, so we need to pay attention to that one. And so many issues our listeners need to pay attention to, because I think many people, including you, I, our listeners, are trying to sort through now the world of independent media. And it is global. It's hard to sort through it. I am still, Malcolm, struggling with, when I get home and I want to, let's say I just want to flip through some TV channels, where can I get fair, balanced news, if anywhere?
What do you think? Where?
I don't know. I've been flipping. It seems like there's a million stations, but nothing is on. And I don't know. Every so often I'll land on somewhere and there'll be a story. Then the next story will just go into, you know, again, mainly bias. You know, bias on one side of an issue or another, as opposed to a discussion of an issue. We don't learn from bias. We learn from fair, balanced discussion. And the media used to actually have a fair, balanced rule. And that was thrown out with the advent of partisan politics. They used to have a rule. You actually had to present two sides of
right.
a story.
That's right. That's back in those days. That was correct. Yeah. You speak about what you say right there. Tom Rentz, attorney Tom Rentz, and myself had exactly that kind of a very fair and balanced conversation on Viewpoint this Sunday. To your point, mm-hmm. we didn't necessarily, it wasn't about talking points of agreeing or disagreeing. Tom said his piece, whatever it was, might have differed slightly, whatever. You said your piece. We don't beat people up for the truth. That is the truth. It's their opinion, and it's unbiased to their viewpoint. Isn't that what we just did on Viewpoint this Sunday, right?
That's the reason why it's called Viewpoint. It's because, exactly. you know, we don't all we don't all have to agree. Think about sports fans. A lot of our listeners are sports fans. Right. What if you turned on a game and the announcers are completely for one team and completely against the other team?
That's right.
It's not very fun to listen to.
That's why I don't get on and I don't act like a crazy man like Sean Hannity and cut people off and talk over them. I hate that stuff when people do that nonsense. The Sean Hannity hour, I call it, you know? They're so abrupt and obnoxious. I mean, why not just let people talk? Like, I've got people on the platform now that I don't agree with their opinions. I've got one now that'll have a piece out. And I just know I won't because he thinks more to the left all the time. I'm not a leftist. That's not the way I think. But I surely invite them in to have a conversation. I just believe in freedom. I believe in conservative values. I believe in patriotism. Those are my beliefs. But I don't force them on other people, Peter.
Agreed. But I think we should hear those opinions. I always learn something. And even though he kind of drives me nuts, I was glad to see Chris Cuomo talk to Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought it was something good. When was the last time we saw a former CNN anchor talk to a former Fox anchor? Why not? So we can learn. You know, a lot of young people, you know, they gravitate to Joe Rogan.
Yeah. And we're not Joe having Rogan, that enough.
Yeah.
We're not
yeah. Good. Joe Rogan does have people on either side of the aisle. He does.
You know, this is a good conversation. I'm so glad we had it I really mean it, because it's reminded me of certain values here that I need to be reminded of, Peter, sincerely. And you've given me a real process of thinking here now. It just reminds me of the importance, which I do believe and I do understand. Even though I got to be honest with you now, and the other side of that argument is this: when I stand for that truth and I allow those people that, do you know, I get people and some people I really like a lot and have great respect for on our platform, and I'm very serious. They'll send me messages almost immediately and give me hell. Oh, I'm very serious. And it drives me crazy, but they'll drive me messages and give me hell. The fact, why did I let that person on, and why they're the enemy? Why would you do that? And I don't know what the hell to say to these people anymore. It's like,
you made me laugh. In my Substack, you know, I tried to bring forward medical news. Yeah. And so there was an analysis on cholesterol lowering medicine, statins, and it was just straight up, what do you get if you take a statin? So I put it out there, and my co-author John Leake monitors the conversation. Somebody reeled up, that's it. Ban Dr. McCullough. This person said, ban me, that I'm banned for that. analysis.
crazy.
Like, we got to be
Yeah,
blunt.
people don't want to hear it. What they want to do with the left and the right in this country, sick as it is, people, is everybody, they want to, everybody talks in a vacuum, and they just want to hear their like-minded thoughts. And that's why I despise actually social media so much, because what they do on social media is they get on with these accounts, and I laugh at our people all the time, and people I have a lot of respect for, but they get on there and they block everybody with an opposing viewpoint. Ah, did you see that guy over there? He liked that. And just block him. And they do this all the time. They block everybody. I said, what the hell's the point of having a conversation if you just want to have people with the same exact viewpoint? You know, this country is really, we've lost our way, Peter. We've lost our way.
You know, give credit. I can tell you one kind of organization that was just at least bringing the live feeds is Children's Health Defense. They brought the live feed of Murthy versus Biden, you know, on Twitter. So you could just, I literally was in between patients and I clicked on it and I listened to a little bit. And they brought the live feed for the Arizona Senate, the novel coronavirus Southwestern Investigative Committee, of which I'm a standing member. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, real quickly, that in Arizona that you were at the other day there, right? Mm-hmm. This message you sent me earlier was pretty shocking, but not really. But it kind of cements what you and I've been talking about here for people. This is the one from this person, Constance, just using the first name here. But wait a minute. Is that the one?
I sent you one from Dr. Hale.
That's the one. That was another one for God. Sorry. 80% of the people with COVID. Yeah, this one said, I can't tell you how many times a patient will come into the emergency department and say, oh, I feel like I have the flu or COVID, but it can't be COVID. I just got vaccinated. And I would say probably the doctor said this now, 80% of the people he sees now with COVID are vaccinated. And this is Dr. Stephen Hale from the Arizona Novel Coronavirus Southwestern Intergovernmental. Mm. Is that pretty wild?
Yeah, Stephen Hale, he said the Veterans Administration, he had to give a long disclosure that he's not speaking for the VA. So he was a new witness to the group. And the group started out with a new witness, which was Dr. Mary Telly Bowden. We've had her on our platform. By the way, she just gave a speech in front of the Supreme Court today. But Dr. Bowden went through the course of her lawsuit against the FDA. Now, here's an example where the government does use its own Twitter account, but they grossly mislead the nation by saying that ivermectin is only a horse dewormer.
Yeah.
And they give a command where they say, stop it. And so the
You'll
lawyers,
be censored and shadow banned for that and thrown off. You know that.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is the FDA doing this. And so the lawyers for Bowden and also Robert Apter, another plaintiff was with us, the lawyer kept pressing the FDA lawyer and said, well, is that a command? Are you commanding people when you say stop it? Is that a command? And she danced and she danced and she danced and finally concluded, listen, the government cannot command people.
But that gets back to the Supreme Court, what we started with, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that we just did a full circle.
The two are related, absolutely, for sure. So Mary Telly Bowden gave a great testimony on what she's done as a physician. She was treating COVID, great use of monoclonal antibodies, which were safe and effective. Remember last week, we covered this on Viewpoint about you know, a great product of Trump's Operation Warp Speed was the monoclonal antibodies.
Right.
They were
That's
always
right.
safe and effective when we use them.
Yeah.
Robert Apter, who is a retired medical physician, now recently retired, but treated tons of COVID patients. He testified, myself. And then the committee was really heavily influenced by Janae Shamp, who's an Arizona senator. And let me tell you, she's really matured. She's a former nurse. She's been in the trenches. She's pushing very hard. She pushed hard for pledges on everybody to vow to get these products off the market. She's going to call the hospital administrators to account. They just had a remdesivir death of someone, it's a husband of someone she knows who works on the state house side of things. And she goes, they're still giving remdesivir now and
terrible.
Still allowing its full
outrageous.
Toxicity to ravage people. And so, you know, this is my third meeting. I'm a standing member. I give Arizona a ton of credit. They're making progress. Now, they're a state that does not have its own Surgeon General. It's not like Florida. And so, or I take it back. They have a Surgeon General, but he's very inactive. Texas has no Surgeon General. But we're starting to have more Arizona physicians. We had two Texas physicians and two Arizona physicians there. Congressman Steve Montenegro represents the House, but they're doing it the right way. So they have the Senate represented, they have the House. There's typically an audience that's very engaged. Yeah. It's all filmed, live streamed out. And
That's good.
And there's discussion and dialogue. Now, Shamp did review one of the kind of, you know, mic drop moments was the most recent CDC study on myocarditis after the vaccines, where every page was redacted. It was, you know, probably 100 plus pages of blank paper. I don't know if you saw this, Malcolm.
No.
Yeah. Every page redacted meant the CDC felt that every single piece of information in this manuscript on vaccine myocarditis could not be seen by the public.
Wow.
So under FOIA, they released a 100% redacted scientific manuscript.
You know, this whole thing is so ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. And I know we got to go to pause here, but I just want to say this. How sick is this? That this doctor says, just think about this, everybody. 80% of the people that he now sees with COVID are vaccinated. And would you agree with that statement, Dr. McCullough, right there that I just said?
Absolutely.
Okay, so everybody just think a minute here. So they go ahead, the remdesivir you're just talking about, people are dying, okay? They push these vaccines on everybody. They demand them. They mandate them again. Talk about overreach. Not just the government, but the colleges, but corporations, but groups and organizations following the orders from the feds and others. Say, oh, you got to do this. Yeah. See, everybody, they turn up their lives upside down backwards. Many succumb and get the shots. Many have paid the ultimate price. They've died. They've been injured, maimed, destroyed, other things. They've been destroyed, if not financially, economically, relationships, you name it, all of this. Now we get, and how sick is this? We get to a point now, 4 years after, and we're now saying, oh, by the way, you know, 80% of the people now, they get COVID now, have these wonderful, trusted, safe and effective, marvelous vaccines that did such a marvelous job that everybody's got COVID now who had them to begin with. So what the hell did we accomplish? What did we accomplish, do you know?
We accomplished loading people with genetic material, and now we're actually living out the FDA guidance on this, Malcolm. 5 to 15 years of observation and worry since the last shot. That's the FDA guidance.
But the FDA says that?
Yes. For novel genetic products, the FDA says 5 to 15 years.
Wow.
And people have asked me, I put this in the record.
I did not testified know that.
I testified in Congress. I put this in the record. We have a minimum of 5 years of worry. So people who took shots in 2021 and didn't take any more, the clock is ticking at least until 2026.
So why are they admitting that now? I'm not understanding this. Why are they admitting
that? That was original FDA guidance. No one was looking at this. The original FDA guidance says, you know, for a gene product, a gene therapy of some
sort. So that's been there right along, you're saying.
Right, but that's the reason why Pfizer and Moderna are trying to change the regs on this, so the messenger RNA is not considered a genetic product. Have you heard this, right? So they're trying to change. They said, we don't want to be considered a genetic product. But in the FDA transcript so far, it is considered a genetic product. If it's genetic, it's 5 to 15 years of observation.
You know, I don't know about you and how this impacts you as a person. And I shouldn't say it that way, but I get sick with this. I get internally, not just frustrated, but I get like grossed out. I get internally destroyed, sick This thing, does it impact people the way it impacts me in such a grave way? I get so, this is so destructive to me, what we're talking about, and the impact of human beings and people. You know, this stuff really makes me beyond angry. It's so evil, Peter, that I get really lost with these conversations. Does that make any sense?
Well, you're having this deep visceral response, but also you didn't take the vaccine. Malcolm, I didn't take the vaccine either, but people close to me did, and I feel sick to my stomach for
Exactly.
them.
That's my point. I get it for
Yeah,
other people. Yeah.
but here's the thing.
Yeah.
What do people who took the shots, what do they feel like? I
Yeah.
think there's kind of three categories. There are some people who are very activated and they're angry,
Yeah.
like Steve Kirsch is an example.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of people who took them and just they know something's wrong and they say, I just don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. No, that's common. And then you got this third group who took them and said, listen, I'm going to take some more. They are completely in the narrative.
This is one of the conversations that came up with my daughter coming home from college with the little gathering at her birthday. By the way, it's her birthday too this week, okay? So here's the thing. Here's the thing. This conversation that comes up, listen to this, Peter. So my brother-in-law, my wife's brother, he had some of these shots. And he didn't want to have them, but he just somehow took them. I don't know what happened. And he's like beside himself now, and he's thinking if something's going to happen, he's hearing the story. And I'm saying, now my mother-in-law, my wife's mom, who's quite older now, she's like 84, I believe it is. And she's having all of a sudden in her life, she's never had problems. She said to me that day, just the other day, she said, she said, Malcolm, she said, I've never had heart problems in my life. Now I'm having heart problems all of a sudden out of nowhere. There's myocarditis stuff and other things. She said, I so regret having taken these vaccines. And she's really upset with it that she's done this. And my brother-in-law's upset and the other people are upset. And I refrained. My kids did not take them. My wife and I did not take, we went through all of this, but I mean, all these people around me are telling them they take it. And this is where the conversation, I said, I fought this fought for all these years. I fought this fought when it wasn't even a popular fight with America Out Loud and with COVID and with the shots and early treatment. And I fought this fought when it wasn't a popular fight to fight. And I did it because I felt in my heart it was the right thing to do. And you started talking early treatment. And back when you started talking about that, I was thinking early treatment, okay, all right. And then, then we get sideswiped, and it hits our lives in the Delta variant. My wife and I, we thought like we would never get this thing because we were healthy, and of course she had a car accident before this, so her immune system was blown and compromised, and so she got it really bad and almost died in it. And some of you people, a lot of you people know the story. I'm not going to repeat it, but. And now I talk to these people, Peter, and I lose my collective thoughts at the time, and we're sitting there in this personal gathering, and I almost want to grab a microphone and say, "Are you listening to me, people? Like I told you not to take these damn shots." It's like, jeez, my own family didn't listen to me,
Well, think about what we've been advocating for. We're just advocating for
man.
trust your natural body, trust your natural immunity. We're not advocating doing something unnatural or anything else outside of just leave the human body alone. Just leave it
Amen.
alone.
I got a story when we come back in a moment. I mentioned the word constants. That's why I messed that up a little bit ago. This is actually from Constance. So I'm going to tease that up right there. And this is going to really be a profound from a listener point of view. And I've got to, it just, maybe this is why I'm revved up for this. I don't know, but it touches my heart in ways I can't even describe to you, friends. We're going to take a pause right now and join you back in just a moment on America Out Loud Pulse.
One of the biggest advances in nutraceuticals and supplements is Healthy Cell. And the Healthy Cell line is extensive. I typically focus on the microgel technology. Three major products here: Immune Super Boost, the Focus and Recall, and then the REM sleep supplement. Each one of these is complementary and they can have a role, I think, in the health of your life each and every day. I know they do in my case. Many of you know, after COVID-19 twice, I spent almost the entire year in 2022 with an upper respiratory tract illness. Now, thankfully, and I've been diligent with the immune super boost in the morning, followed by focus and energy, and then in the evening time, the REM sleep supplement. The microgel technology works, and boy, does it work fast. So go to our website, America Out Loud Talk Radio, find the banner bar for Healthy Cell, click on it, and that'll take you to the site to get a discount on your purchase of all Healthy Cell products. So let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill, it's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
We join you back here, my fellow Americans. This is Malcolm Out Loud here, along with Dr. Peter McCullough. You know, I get so passionate about this stuff, I have to tell you. And we never have enough time to get through all the things we love to talk about and share with you, but this is heartfelt stuff, and, you know, and it's really what it is. But I want to, we're on Q&A 107 today. We're going to do some questions right now. I want to jump into some things here. But I want to get, listen to this now. Dr. McCullough, I want you to hear this message from Constance, this listener. I don't know Constance, but Constance, I hope you're hearing this. I want to tell you my heart goes out to you in ways I can't even begin to describe to you. And if you hear this message and you want to come on and have a voice on my Voice of a Nation, I'll be happy to open up the airwaves for you. And I'm very sincere with that comment. Here's the message from Constance here. Dr. McCullough asked why people would seek the COVID shots, why that was. We asked that question many times, so she's just referencing that back. She said, my son was a captain for a dredging company, and they worked with the Corps of Engineers. The federal government mandated any who worked with the Corps. My 46-year-old son dropped dead at the cash register of a Dollar General store as he was buying heartburn relief meds. He was totally against the science behind this and held out until he was told not to come back to work until he was vaccinated. Heartbroken mom, Constance.
Wow.
You know, she didn't elaborate. She got right to the point. And this message breaks my heart, my friend. It crushes me. That's all I can say to you.
Well, what can we learn from this? Vaccine myocarditis in about half of cases does cause some chest discomfort. Don't be fooled and think that it's heartburn. It could be something serious like vaccine myocarditis. In the paper by Holscher and colleagues published in the European Society of Cardiology, I'm the senior author, of the fatal myocarditis cases that we describe, and they're all in that paper, fatal, none of the victims had a chance to even get an EKG or see a doctor ahead of time. So, you know, if we're going to save lives here, this myocarditis can happen, you know, within a week of taking the shot, but it can happen 2 years later as well. We've got to pay attention to this. This is very, very important. I'm absolutely heartbroken with that comment. Now, let me say, where I thought this was going, Malcolm, is is a rationale to give a shot. So let me tell you, my last patient I just finished with just a few minutes ago was a severely disabled young man in his 20s with a congenital chromosomal abnormality. He's in a wheelchair. He can't speak. He has refractory seizures. He's kind of all crumpled over in a wheelchair. And the nicest parents in the world, they spend most of their time taking him to doctors. He can't walk without assistance, can't toilet without assistance. They said, Dr. McCullough, we didn't know what to do. But we can tell you that we thought if he got COVID, it could be fatal. So we got him the shots. And he took three shots. And then once we started seeing things come out, we backed off and we told the doctors we didn't want more shots. And they, you know, wanted my opinion. And you know what, Malcolm? I understand those parents. I really do. And when I examine this young man, I have to tell you, I think if he got severe COVID the way your wife did, I think it would have been curtains.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah.
So if the vaccines would have worked, I can understand people who are very severely compromised taking a shot early on.
Right.
What else could they have done? They saw Americans dying, and this was the only hope.
Yeah, I know. So many people. Constance, thank you for sending that message in. It's so heartfelt. I appreciated the way you wrote it too, and you didn't elaborate, but the way you ended it, heartbroken mom, I totally get that. And reach back to me. I'd love to talk to you, and I'd love to have a conversation with you. I'd love to have you even on and opine on this, but it has to stand for something. Your son's life stands for something. You stand for something. And this message of importance needs to be out there. This all was avoidable. And that's my message. And it's sick. So anyways, that's that. All right. Now, let me get into some others here, please. This one is from Ollie. Dr. McCullough, in the UK, Professor Angus Dalglish spoke about these awful cancers springing up in his patients. He spoke of data that links it to the jab, but said that the data points towards the booster being the main cause of the cancers with people with less jabs being a lower risk. Do you agree with this assessment?
I do, and it brings up an important point. Angus Dalglish is a prominent oncologist in the UK, and he's been raising the warning signals on the vaccines causing cancer. Why would it be on the third shot? Because cancer may be one of the side effects where cumulative toxicity matters. One shot, you don't get very much. Two shots, you get more. Three shots may be enough to tip the scales towards oncogenicity or cancer formation. And it may be far worse than 5, 6, and 7. Do you know that none of the government agencies have done a cumulative toxicity study? Yeah, so people, you remember, healthy people in the United States, if they're following the CDC, are on their 9th shot, Malcolm, immunocompromised on 12 shots. The safety of taking 9 shots has never been evaluated. It's actually never even been contemplated. The government could run an analysis right now of, are there more and more complications as you take more and more shots? Nobody's done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know some people have done, like you say, 8, 9, 10. I think they're up to 10 now, you said, or whatever.
Wow.
So I don't know. All right, let me get this one's from Molly. Hello, Dr. McCullough and Malcolm. I wonder how many people were injected while in the hospital without being aware of it. They had the system set up so people would get sick at home and come to the hospital only to get sicker, meaning I guess they didn't have the early treatment. And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't inject them with the COVID shots while they were sick and out of it. I've heard stories of this happening, and I wonder if there's a way to tell if people who have long COVID or serious consequences from COVID were mostly those who were hospitalized. Wow.
That's a good point. People should be getting their hospital records, see what was administered. I knew of, by personal communication, at least one hospital in Canada that had standing orders for vaccination, that it was just going to happen automatically. I'm unaware of that happening in U.S. hospitals. But you know where I'm very suspicious it happened is in nursing homes. And there, the patient and the family members have relatively little control. And even if the family said, you know, I don't want my relative vaccinated, I wonder if nursing homes honored that family wish or if they just went ahead and did it. A patient with dementia wouldn't know.
That's right. That's right.
So
nursing homes were ground zero for a lot of deaths, weren't they? No.
They were. And, early on, the analysis by Scott McLachlan from the UK demonstrated that early on, the deaths from the vaccine were just very explosive in the nursing homes. So early on, seniors did die of the COVID-19 vaccine.
Definitely. This one is from Jamie. I was just provided with your information from a family member. I've been diagnosed with long haul COVID and chronic fatigue. I've been battling it for 2 years now, and I'm still suffering greatly. I'm trying to find a resource that provides a functional assessment exam for myself. I've lost my job due to COVID, and I'm working with long-term disability and Social Security. I live in the Metro Detroit area. Do you know of any resources or doctors that could assist me?
I think one of the best programs is by Dr. David Brownstein. And he's in the Bloomfield Hills area. She'll find him. But he does a very complex and high-quality assessment of long COVID.
Awesome.
And what's gone on. I was recently in a symposium with him. He's been one of the early treatment innovators. So look up Dr. Brownstein.
There you go, Jamie. Perfect. All right. This one's from Mo. Dr. McCullough has mentioned there are 4,000 batches of Pfizer and that the top 10% should be concerned. These batches on my bad is my batch. Is the list global or just nationally in the USA? I'm from the UK and looking at my batches. They were both in the top 50, but not in the top 10, and both had around 1,500 adverse events. Wow. Which category would you place them in?
It is global. It is global. And it's actually that website, as I recall, is run out of the UK. And what were the rankings again?
They were 4,000 mentioned there are 4,000 batches of Pfizer,
right,
and that the top 10% should be concerned.
Right.
And these batches are my bad is my batch. This first globally in the USA, I'm from the UK. They were both in the top 50, but not in the top 10. And both had around 1,500 adverse events.
No, that's big. Those are very, very dangerous batches. Very dangerous. Now, Nick Holscher and I have a paper of a man who died of a fatal vaccine hemorrhage, and we used How Bad Is My Batch for the first time in a scientific manuscript, and we found other deaths in his group. So you want to look at How Bad Is My Batch and see if other people had died from the same batch. That would be very important to look at. But, death is obviously the most serious of all indicators. But with that information, Malcolm, I'd be worried.
Okay. Yeah, I could see by the numbers it looked pretty bad, but yes. Okay. Caroline says, do you think it's going to get better for the vaccinated the further we get away from the shots?
Yes, I do. And I've had a recent communication with Kevin McKernan, who's been on my show now. Kevin's indicated that human enzymes, what's called RNase A and B, they should break down Pfizer and Moderna. So given enough time, we ought to get this messenger RNA out of our bodies. And I think that was really helpful news to hear. Then it's just a matter of getting rid of the spike protein, and that's what we're doing with McCullough Protocol-based spike protein detoxification, the products by the Wellness Company, the Ultimate Spike Detox. But yes, I think the longer we get away from that, every day and every month and every year we get away from these, the better we can feel.
I'm going to end with this point here, Dr. McCullough. This is from Millie. It's probably a very interesting way to end, and I just get a comment from you, but... Millie says, there is a lot of talk that soon these evil bastards, she says, will do a blackout, or they will switch everyone's internet off. What are your thoughts on this?
they're just going to turn us all off? I mean, it sounds like we're going there. We'll have to figure out the title for this show, but maybe the lights are out, close the door, turn off the lights.
God bless you, Millie. I hope not, but I do wonder about that. Sometimes they will wake up and there's no connection to the internet. What happened? I don't know. Oh my golly, I had to end on that footnote, Dr. McCullough. I had to tell you, man, we needed a laugh, didn't we? Thank you for joining us on America Out Loud, folks. Always, I'll be ahead.